Today is Saturday, March 18th. Today, we are focusing on two major money events impacting the economy and possibly your own bank account. One, the seemingly sudden failure of some U.S. banks, and two, stubbornly high inflation. We'll get into inflation in the second half of this episode with the expert best known as the Inflation Guy. But first, the story getting all the headlines over the past week. Major bank failures on a scale not seen since the Great Recession. The federal government quickly stepped in, promising the failed bank's customers will get access to all of their money despite the collapse. But we wanted to take a little more time than we have on our weekday episodes to explain more about how all of this happened and what can be learned from it. Our guest expert is Justin Bayer. He's a senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal who has been covering the collapse and helps break it all down. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, where we provide all the day's news in 10 minutes. I'm Erica Mandy. It's now time for today's Special Edition Saturday. Justin, thank you for joining us here on the Newsworthy.
Great to be here.
So the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank marked the second biggest bank failure in U.S. history. Can you first try to explain what happened, at least on a basic level?
Two things happened that put them in the situation they were in. One was lots of startups that had money with Silicon Valley Bank came under pressure. They burned through their cash. They started to pull more money out of their bank. Problem number two was the Fed started raising rates. And so like most banks, Silicon Valley had a big portfolio of fixed income securities, mainly government bonds. But once rates started to go up, the value of those bonds went down. So they were suddenly sitting on lots of paper losses. Now, those two issues kind of come to a head last week when they have continued to drain their deposits and need to raise money. In their attempt to do so, they were forced to sell some of those securities at a loss. So that really made a lot of people nervous when that happened. And eventually, lots of their customers pulled all of their deposits out of Silicon Valley Bank. And at the same time, the stock sale they were trying to pull off in the face of that, they couldn't follow through. So suddenly, a lot of cash coming out and not much hope of getting cash to come in.
And I think the background that most people know, but just to clarify it here, is that banks don't just hold on to your money. They're doing things with it so that if everybody wants it at once, they don't have all of that money ready to go.
Exactly. Right.
And that's kind of what a run on the bank is when too many people try to take out all of their money.
Yes. So in most cases, banks put that money to work in various kinds of loans, which they did like anyone else did. But they also buy lots of safe securities, government bonds that sit there and effectively do the same thing, that bring in predictable income for them over time. But it's less liquid, right? So it's difficult to sell those things, particularly in the middle of a crisis, in a period where the value that you get for those sales is not what it would have been, say, a year ago.
And within days of SVB failing, Signature Bank failed. What happened there?
Yes. So Signature had in some ways, a similar structure to Silicon Valley Bank. They were a major lender and bank to startups. They had a big exposure to the whole crypto industry, which is a subset of that startup community. So they were also facing the strain of seeing a lot of those companies really lose money and drain cash from their banking institutions over the last few months. So lots of investors sort of noted the similarities between those two banks. And so again, by the weekend, there seemed to be no choice but to try to take over that bank as well. So that's what the FDIC did with them.
And in some ways, the speed of which all of this happened probably wouldn't have been as possible in the past, right? I mean, people can now move money around from their phones, that people are talking about what's happening on social media. How much of a role, if any, do you think that played?
Yeah, I think definitely it accelerated the ability to compare notes and frankly, to make one another nervous happen at a lot faster than it would have been in this sort of pre-social media age. I think the other issue with those two banks, but especially Silicon Valley Bank, is that a big chunk of their deposits are not insured by the government. The government has a cap on those that insurance at $250,000. So for most individuals, they don't have that much money at one bank. But if you get into companies and investment firms, venture capital firms, they often do. So I think that also acted as an accelerant where there were a lot of companies that were looking at what was unfolding and saying, wait a second, if this bank goes bust, I may not get this money back. I have to act now. I can't wait to see what the potential rescue might look like.
Right. It was not guaranteed that the government was going to step in and give them their access to their money. But they ultimately did. And we saw the government step in. And my understanding is that was in large part to avoid panic, where every American starts questioning if they'll be able to have access to their money and start pulling out their money, and it becomes this much larger problem. So what would you say the risk to the rest of the banking system is at this point?
You know, there has been another rescue of sorts that the government helped facilitate in another bank called First Republic. You know, we still see, a lot of bank stocks struggle this week. We have another episode out in Europe with Credit Suisse. So they've had a really rough go of it this week. So there's still a lot going on in the banking sector, and the feeling that the industry and the financial system may not be totally out of the woods in spite of the action so far.
So what do you have to say, or what's your advice to, you know, the average American, not necessarily a tech startup, who is wondering, is my money at risk when it's sitting in the bank?
You know, it all comes down to how much money you have at any one bank, right? I mean, so the rules are pretty clear with respect to deposits under $250,000. That's protected. If it's more than that, I think it's certainly worth looking at the condition of those institutions. It's a good idea to sort of figure out what your exposures are, how you would expect those investments or your money to do in different scenarios that could play out in the near future.
There are now investigations into this collapse. What do you think banks, regulators, and or the average person can or should learn from this whole ordeal?
First and foremost, it's another reminder that almost every financial institution out there is built on confidence, and that once that is lost, there in many cases may be no way to reverse that. When people are scared, they're fearful of losing money, that they will make decisions, in some cases very rash decisions. So I think it's probably clear we're not out of the woods yet. You know, I think this situation with some of these banks seems to be, so far at least, fairly contained, but we don't know what we don't know, and people are pretty sensitive to things that suggest that the financial system is weaker than it should be.
Okay, so one of the contributing factors to the bank collapse that we just talked about is the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. And why is that happening? Yep, inflation. So still ahead, we're reviewing the basics of inflation, like what triggers it, and we discuss what to expect next, like prices don't typically come back down after they go up, and whether wages will ever catch up. Michael Ashton is our next guest. He's the managing principal of Enduring Investments, a specialty consulting and investment management boutique that offers inflation market expertise. And he's the host of the Inflation Guy podcast. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. The Newsworthy is brought to you by Indeed. If you're a business owner who does not want to waste time, you'll love Indeed for hiring. With Indeed Instant Match, you can instantly receive a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. So don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Yep, all the tools you need on the same platform to help you keep things efficient and easy and still effective. And by the way, according to U.S. Indeed data, candidates you invite to apply through Instant Match are 3 times more likely to apply to your job than candidates who only see it in search. Indeed knows that when you're doing everything for your company, you cannot afford to overspend on hiring. Visit Indeed.com/newsworthy to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/newsworthy. Indeed.com/newsworthy. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And thanks to our other sponsor, ZocDoc. I love interacting with talented people, whether it's the people I work with here at The Newsworthy, shout out to our producers Emily and Aaron and our audio editor Baz, or it's simply the waiter who offers exceptional service, making a night out even more special. I always appreciate that feeling of ease and trust. But perhaps getting talent and quality from your doctors is one of the most important. And when you find the right doctor, you can feel it. You feel heard, you are put at ease, and you trust their advice. Well, ZocDoc can help you find the doctor that's truly right for you, which means finding quality care may only be a few taps away. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance, are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun. Millions of people use ZocDoc's free app. So go to ZocDoc.com/newsworthy and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. That's ZocDoc.com/newsworthy. ZocDoc.com/newsworthy. Okay, now back to my conversation with the inflation guy, Michael Ashton. Michael Ashton, thank you so much for joining us here on The Newsworthy.
Thanks for having me.
So first, I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. And I know this can be complicated, but at its core, how do you like to explain what exactly inflation is and what causes it?
Inflation is a way of describing the fact that prices always go up. You know, if you go to an orchard and it's had a really bad season for apples, then you would expect that they're going to be charging more for apples. Whereas if they've had a bumper crop of apples, then the price of those apples tends to go down, right? And we know this, and, you know, if there's only one plumber in town, he probably charges quite a bit. So things that are in short supply tend to have higher prices. Things that are in that are less scarce tend to have lower prices.
Is it accurate to say you're basically getting the same for more money, or you're getting less value for the same price?
Yeah, that's right. So you're getting less value for the same amount of dollars. So the dollar doesn't go as far. You buy less. And that's the same as saying it's just not worth as much, right? It doesn't buy as much.
And so one thing people have pointed to is, you know, giving out money during the pandemic, all of a sudden people had money to spend. And therefore, the more people are buying, prices start going up because there's more demand. Yes,
that's right. It was also where that money came from. The problem was that at the same time, the Federal Reserve was effectively printing, you know, basically buying all the bonds that the Treasury would issue. They basically just spewed out a lot of these dollars. They created a bunch of dollars out of thin air, and we got the absolutely predictable outcome, which was and is inflation.
So what's your take on where things stand right now when it comes to inflation in America, based on the latest report that came out this week?
It's unfortunate news. You know, I think that people have been waiting for inflation to peak. And if you look at price pressures, they haven't peaked yet. You know, year on year, median inflation is still rising. Goods prices have decelerated quite a bit. You know, some things like used car prices have actually gone down, but all the services that we buy and everything from medical care to shelter, all of those things which tend to be sort of sticky and on the service side and tend to respond to wages, all those things are not coming, they're not decelerating.
And at the end of the day, what does that mean for the average American?
Well, what that means is that the average American is, you know, if you haven't gotten a raise recently, it means that your standard of living is going down. If you have gotten a raise, then most likely you haven't been able to keep up with inflation. And so your standard of living is going down, just not quite as fast. So if you're on Social Security, you got an 8.5% raise last year or this year, but that's not enough to compensate for all the inflation we've seen. And we tend to all lose ground. Our the standard of living of everybody tends to kind of gradually erode, and you have to run faster just to stay in place.
So the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates as a way to try and slow down inflation. And as we've talked about a lot on the show, it's this delicate balance trying to slow inflation without causing a recession. So what are your thoughts on the Fed strategy and how it's going so far?
The Federal Reserve has raised interest rates almost 5% and inflation's still going up. So the Fed has been more aggressive than any Federal Reserve in the last 40 years, and they're not they're not driving down inflation. So you kind of scratch your head and say, well, maybe interest rates aren't the right answer then.
If it comes down to where the Fed wants it to go, eventually, let's say we're there, what happens to prices? They don't necessarily come down, right? We're kind of like at a new starting point.
That's right. That's a really important nuance that has to do with our language, right? So when somebody says, and a politician says, you know, we're going to drive inflation back down, what most Americans hear is, oh, good, prices are going to go back to where they were before this all happened. That's not what it says. It says, like you just articulated, it just means that prices from this new level are going to go up in a more comfortable pace that we're accustomed to. But used car prices up 20% or whatever it is, 30 or 40% from before the crisis, they're not going to go back to where they were. They never are.
And why not?
Well, because again, it's tied to sort of the amount. We've had a permanent decline in the value of a dollar because we've had a permanent increase in the amount of dollars out there. Now, if all of a sudden the Federal Reserve said, we're going to take that 20% of extra dollars that we put out there, and we're going to pull them all back, then you could see prices come back down. That's just not going to happen. You know, prices are not going to go back to pre-COVID levels, even if inflation does.
So what's your advice to the average American while we are dealing with historically high inflation?
This is always a difficult question to answer because, you know, none of us controls the amount of dollars that are out there. And you know, you have sort of two choices. You can either try to go get more dollars, get a better raise, or you can spend less on stuff. And both of those things are not great answers.
Do you expect wages to eventually catch up once inflation slows down?
I do think that wages will have a certain momentum even as inflation comes back down. It does tend to be true that in inflationary periods, we tend to fall behind and it takes a long time to sort of really catch up. But I do think we'll eventually catch up.
Final thought or takeaway for our audience when it comes to inflation?
What I always say in my podcast is defend your money, both the money that you have in the bank and the money that you're earning in the future. You know, you have to go out there recognizing that inflation is gradually, you know, scraping away all this money, and you can't just sort of sit and wait to see if that's going to all get fixed. You have to go out there and actively look for those wages, those raises. You have to actively go out there and make investments that systematically can help you. I will say that most people who eventually, you know, who are earning wages, and especially if you're a homeowner and you have Social Security someday, all those things keep up with inflation over time. And so it's not necessarily as bad as you think.
Well, thank you so much to both of our guests for helping to break down these important but sometimes complex topics. Be sure to look for Justin Bayer's articles about the banking collapse and other financial news in the Wall Street Journal. And for more from Michael Ashton, check out the Inflation Guy podcast. Thanks so much for making the Newsworthy part of your listening routine. We feature expert interviews every Saturday and then keep you updated on all the other stories you need to know with our 10-minute roundups every Monday through Friday. So we'll be back on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend.